You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into episode 313 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR Podcast Network. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again by the one and only Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
I am fantastic, Jack Pilgrim. How are you?
Oh, just peachy. Just peachy. Because the Cats... They did exactly what they were supposed to do, given the circumstances, given the opponent. We were very critical and, you know, obviously not doom and gloom. The sky is falling. We should all just pack up and take our basketballs home for the season after what was admittedly a very, very tough one at home against the Tennessee Volunteers. Acknowledge that this team has a lot of work to do before we can start realistically thinking of them back as the national title contender that we have said that they could. And we've said that this would be a really bad wasted opportunity if this team isn't able to get to those heights. And they have some work to do to get back to kind of, you know, being in that mindset of us being comfortable talking about them as a contender. You're not going to learn much of anything going against, admittedly, just point blank period, a really, really bad Vanderbilt team. Not a whole lot of talent to like there, but all things considered, when you have that type of matchup, you have that type of opponent, the location where it is, a true SEC road game, a 32-point beatdown is something I will never, ever, ever, ever complain about. They went down and took care of business against Vanderbilt and sort of getting back on track to what we believe they can be as a basketball team.
It's a get-right game. I think that's what I called it on the last episode that we had, Jack. And it's one of those things that had they lost it, we and everyone else would have crushed them for it. So I'm going to do the opposite. They won it, and in the fashion they won it, I'm going to praise them for it. Because especially the way that they had been playing over the last week. And how about this? Like, we're talking about a fifth different starting lineup. Like, it's been mixing and matching. So when you take all of those things into consideration, you know, Justin Edwards slides back in. You know, Aduthiero's been in and out. Reed Shepard, like, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that they have hit some midseason struggles. I think probably the biggest shock of it was that it came at Rupp Arena. Was probably the biggest shock of where it was. So getting right on the road, Vanderbilt is not a good basketball team. Never apologize for winning basketball games on the road in college basketball and in the SEC. That was my takeaway from it. And they got back to scoring the ball, like an impressive clip. And defending, they did some different things that we'll get into. But overall, Jack, I thought it was a win-win. You get right, you build some confidence for a couple of guys. You get some looks at some people. And you win another game and you get back in the win column. I think that was probably the biggest takeaway.
It kind of reminds me of early in the non-conference when you're playing Duquesne, you're playing Hofstra. Like, you play these teams and you go, what is the takeaway here? How can you learn much from it? And obviously, it wasn't going to decide anything long-term just to win. But how it happened in the individual contributors, given the circumstance of Trey Mitchell also out on top of DJ Wagner, both of those two out, back issue for Trey Mitchell and an continued ankle issue for DJ Wagner. That was a game that you could say, all right, show me something else. What can be the defining moment of this game? And when you have Justin Edwards, the guy that we have been just trying to, you know, I don't want to say it's a pity party, but it has become something more than expecting a former five-star top three recruit in the country to play up to his level. It's almost become an individual rooting interest in Justin Edwards, because you just want that kid to stop going through the rut that he's been dealing with. You know, it becomes something more than just basketball, having guys fit, having, you know, it becomes a mental game. So having that guy in that environment make the impact the way he did, it wasn't that he just did a Z against Georgia and hit a couple fluky threes. Z can hit shots, but you get what I'm saying. It wasn't just a, you know, he had a couple wide open dunks that made him, it felt like something tangible to hang on to of, okay, this is a vision of what we could expect from Justin Edwards. Maybe not 17 points every night, but forcing turnovers, getting out in transition, getting looks by himself, you know, it transition looks by himself. That's kind of what we had hoped for him going into this, and he got it. It was finally that aha moment for him. I will never apologize for rooting for a kid that has been through what he had and then finally having that breakthrough moment. He was awesome. And then how about Jordan Burks? Those were the two, I think, that you could really look at and go, man, if you can get those two going beyond everything else that we've already been seeing, Jordan Burks going for a career high 13 points, doesn't miss a shot, hits a three, rebounds well, active defensively, does so many things where you go, damn, this guy might need to be on the floor in some form. I don't know what the role is going to be, but he might need to play. Those are my two biggest takeaways. Justin Edwards finally having his breakthrough moment, and I don't know what you do with Jordan Burks, but feel like you got to get some minutes for him.
Yeah, you do, and it was good to see him too, right? Like, it was good just to see him out there and playing a position that he's more comfortable playing, more of a natural position. But overall, like, back to Justin, Jack, I thought one of the things that stood out to me the most was it would be easy for the confidence to kind of be, you know, shaken and stuff, given everything he's gone through. But he comes out taking shots in rhythm threes there early in the opening segments of the game. You know, he hit one, and I know he put it on the deck once in the first half and got to a little floater that he didn't get to. But I'm seeing some confidence from him, even going back to the Tennessee loss when he had a stretch there. I think he scored four or five in a row, and then Cal took him out. But he did the too small thing. Like, I mean, he has some confidence about him that it doesn't look like that he's, with everything, the struggles, the not even really many ups, just a lot of downs, it kind of looks like it hasn't got to him entirely, and he's still in a good spot mentally to where he can continue to break through and find something over the next 3 to 4 weeks going into postseason play. But good to see Jordan Burks, good to see Z get some run. And I thought all the bigs did some different things, you know, coming off a game where they did collectively nothing. I thought they all mixed it up and did some good stuff. The biggest thing for me about this game, if you go back and watch it, is the way Aaron Bradshaw was sprinting out of ball screens. Go back and watch every single ball screen that he set. He was getting in and out of those with a purpose. And it honestly started off of Z's miss early where Bradshaw took a three. Z gets a rebound, misses it, and then Bradshaw flies in for a putback dunk. Setting the tone and doing that early, he ran like that the entire game. And I thought that was encouraging to see. So Kentucky, to me, set the tone, too, as a team collectively on the glass, especially on the offensive glass. Ugo got a couple of offensive rebounds that Kentucky got threes off of. And then, obviously, you had the putback slam there from Bradshaw. So I thought Kentucky did a good job kind of dictating what it wanted to do. And that's what you do to teams like Vanderbilt.
It was so refreshing to hear Jerry Stackhouse talk about this team the way other teams have been talking about Kentucky. Like, in his post game, he was like, yeah, we knew that we were going to have to come in and bring the physicality, and that's just not something that we were able to do. They came in through the first punch. They were really, you know, enforcing themselves initiating and forcing their will on us. And, you know, we were getting destroyed on the glass. We didn't have all the things that we've heard over the course of this season of this team's biggest downfalls. Will they be able to throw that punch back? Do they have the physicality to, you know, combat other physically tough teams? It felt good to be on the receiving end of those types of comments. And I you know, that's a testament to these guys. The last game, when you have all of your, basically everybody on the roster taller than 6'8" or taller, you know, combining for 4 points, it was a wash. You got zero from your front court. For them to then follow that up again without Trey Mitchell and play the way they did as a unit, it wasn't just Z going crazy by himself. It wasn't that AB just went nuclear. It was everybody kind of contributing something different, kind of attacked them by committee for their as a unit, their best game. It was, I think, in my opinion, Kentucky's best all around front court game since we've seen, especially if you want to throw Jordan Burks in that group too. I thought I was just really, really impressed with the way they initiated things and kind of, you know, forced themselves into the action.
Yeah, and I was encouraged. And obviously, we've talked a ton about rebounding needing to get better with this team and things. And I thought that that's what kind of dictated Kentucky establishing itself as the dominant team, is it was the offensive rebounding early in the game that got them second chance points. Like, they were dominating that category in the opening couple of segments of the game, and that's what got them the early lead that they eventually held on to and extended throughout the game into to a 32-point win margin. So doing that, you still give up 77 on the road at Vandy. And I know, like, the efficiency doesn't move a ton. That's going to happen. Like, that's just part of it. So I saw things to be encouraged about going into this game coming up Saturday and then moving forward when they get back to full strength at some point. So, and it was a collective team win. You don't get those opportunities much in league play where you can look at Jordan Burks, you can look at Z, you can look at Ugo, you can look at Bradshaw. Like, they got looks at a lot of different guys here in the middle of league play, and that doesn't happen much. And hopefully what that did was it builds confidence for these guys moving into the stretch run here, because a week ago we thought Ugo had kind of grabbed the hold of the five spot. A couple weeks ago we were talking that Z was the guy at the five. And then after the last couple of games, after Tennessee, we didn't know where to go with no Trey Mitchell. Then Aaron Bradshaw plays well at Vandy. So I think we're kind of still in line, Jack, with that by committee spot at the five, that it's just kind of they all do different things to add value to what this team does. But if they're all chipping in and doing it, you can play multiple guys. And Kentucky needs that size on the floor. It did affect out of bounds situations. Like, I thought they were significantly better defending baseline underneaths. So you at least saw a willingness to do some things differently. And I think that that's a step in the right direction on the defensive end.
And I do want to touch on it, because I feel like that number was kind of one of the big talking points after the game was, well, Kentucky was just terrible again defensively. This was a team that averaged 66 points a game and they scored 77. Oh my God, the sky's falling. This team's terrible. Understand that when you factor in the possessions, it changes the entire narrative behind that you look, Vanderbilt shot 35.5% and gave up and scored 1.069 points per possession. It's not bad, but it's also not great at all. It's essentially average, especially the 35% shooting. And I they missed some open shots, and it's not a perfect product. It was never going to be a perfect product. This team still has a lot of work to do on the defensive end, but I just didn't really like fans using that 77-point mark and just kind of looking from a very surface level points, what their season average was versus what they're scoring, you know, what they scored against us equals bad defense. Cause that doesn't really tell the whole story when we're talking 73 possessions for Kentucky on 1.49 points per possession and them getting 72 possessions. So I really did think, especially and Cal talked about this tonight in the call-in radio show with the zone, and that will be what we talk about next. He said, we can talk up and down about, as a staff, execution not being where it needs to be, or, well, they're just not communicating enough. Well, they're just doing this and that. And it's kind of like what we talked about on the last show. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. That's kind of what was going on internally, where – you know, they were just like, well, everything seems good on our end. The defense as a whole, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with it. Yeah, but if they're not executing, then it doesn't matter. You gotta throw some type of wrinkle in. You have to change something up, because what is going on right now is just not working. He said that last night. That's why they spent the last couple of days working on zone. I had heard from several different people with varying results, to say the least, that they had thrown a zone in there and had tried installing that over the last over the days following the Tennessee loss, just kind of understanding, even if this isn't something that we go all in with for 40 minutes. Like, that's not something that was going to happen, but we got to figure out to throw a possession here or there. What happens if we try to change the pace up with a press? What happened? You know, we have to just throw something else out there. And Cal acknowledged that. And he said it wasn't perfect. Obviously we still have a work in progress to go, but they threw a couple of possessions, a zone in there, especially based on out of bounds. And for the most part, solid results. And it's just, you just couldn't continue to repeat the same struggles that they had been dealing with. And, you know, results, I'm not too, you know, butthurt over them.
No, and I saw those looks, you know, well into the second half, and it's just different. It depended on where the ball came in bounds. Kentucky was obviously matching up out of it. They trapped once out of it in the coffin corner there. But when you look at what they were doing out of bounds, obviously they had some length right under the rim. Had a 7-footer standing protecting the rim. That was the area that they had been vulnerable in on baseline underneath the last few weeks, and then they were active on the ball. Other guys were turned seeing the ball and seeing cutters and able to kind of take away some of those easy baskets that they had been given up. Now, the thing with that, Jack, is Cal said that the old way worked too, if they would just do it correctly, talking about the way that they and he's defended that way out of bounds for years. But you have to communicate, and that has been outside of discipline. Communication on the defensive end has been another weakness of this team. So if they're not going to be able to communicate effectively and do it, you've got to adjust. And that was the key part. It was just to take away the rim, and then when the ball comes in, you match. And they would defend half-court possessions man-to-man just by showing a zone look. They did it well into the second half, too, and things. And you're still requiring them to communicate. But you're at least helping them a little bit where an area that they struggled in. Is Kentucky going to rely on that the rest of the year? I don't think so. But if it gets you moving in the right direction and you build on it and you start communicating on baseline underneath and you value those situations, then you can start doing some of the other things that he's wanting to do. So I at least thought that the willingness to change, and I hate that it got to a point where it's like, crap, we had to get scored on this many times before we do it. But credit to Cal and the staff for at least throwing it out there and at least showing the initiative to fix it and willing to do something they don't like to do to get it right. Will Kentucky be able to defend man-to-man out of bounds? At some point, yes, I think so. But if this is the answer for now to get it moving in the right direction, I love the decision.
Yeah, and Adam Elkin says in the chat, defense is 80% effort, 20% communication. Last night I've seen progression in the defensive effort, which is promising. And again, that's kind of why – It's really impossible to just jump off the ledge completely with this team ever, because again, and I'll say this until I die, if it comes down to, do I have a group of bucket getters that I am confident are going to go get you, you know, go get you some points in March versus a team that's going to just lock you down and get an extra stop in March, I'm taking points all day, because how many times do we see things stall out and it kind of turn into this grind out where you don't know where the points are coming from. And then that's where we've seen Kentucky fall out of the tournament often. I mean, that you were needing, you need that. I don't need to see ridiculous growth overnight with the defense, but I just needed to see something small to hang on to. Again, it wasn't a perfect performance. Vanderbilt stinks out loud. There were so many different things that just frustrated me. I think Jerry Stackhouse was a whiny little baby with the officiating thing, getting teed up with the numbers and calls the way they were. Just he's a little baby, but whatever. That's beside the point. This was just big picture, the type of performance that you want to see following a 2-game losing streak when you've lost 3 of 4 and you have a Gonzaga game coming up. I think we're past the point of trap games and overlooking opponents, but it could have been easy for them to start thinking quad one, we got to get Bill our resume. We got to figure out how to beat Gonzaga. You know, if we lost to Tennessee and people are kind of losing faith in us, what about that one? You needed this one. And for them to go out and make the statement they did, I feel a lot better long-term what things look like moving forward on both ends, honestly.
And people are probably going to look at me like I'm crazy when I say this. Last night was the biggest win of the season. I know North Carolina happened in Atlanta. That's by far their quality win. But getting right last night was the most important thing to this, because you had not just the last two games. I mean, Arkansas was a clunker offensively for a half. We know South Carolina wasn't good. So they were in a stretch here where they hadn't been playing well overall. And then to me, the ball hadn't been moving. I saw the ball advancing in transition last night. I saw the ball moving in the half court. I saw guys making plays for each other. You're throwing lobs. You're making the right play. Rob Dillingham made some really good plays with the ball in his hands, which we will get to at some point. But just overall, I thought last night was a very good game for 40 minutes for Kentucky. And getting right makes it, to me, the biggest win of the season, because now you're going into a game Saturday where the building's going to be juiced, Jack. It's the first time Gonzaga's coming to Rupp Arena. We know that that's a program that has been a power for the people that are students on campus have known Gonzaga basketball. And they're coming to Rupp Arena for the first time, regardless of whether they have any quad one wins or not. That building's going to be rocking Saturday night, and it's a chance to pick up another quality win. So I still think that just getting right in Nashville can be a turning point to where we look and see what Kentucky does over the next week to 2 weeks and see if they can carry some of that momentum. So just getting that win, to me, made it the biggest win, just given what had happened the week prior.
And with that bracketology you just saw, like, think of how many of those teams that are currently projected ahead of Kentucky as a five seed, think of how many of those guys that would crap their pants if they saw Kentucky matched up against them in March. Like, just be totally transparent. Like, I know it's easy to just be hyper-focused on the 16-6 and who we've lost to, and we can beat anybody, but we can also lose anybody. There's also kind of this gut feel and this momentum aspect of March Madness where it does come, you know, it comes down to matchups and, you know, the individual personnel, obviously, but how much of it, Sean, is one team looking at the other and saying, I don't know if I can beat that team, and just kind of the general mindset going in versus this guy's a cakewalk. Like, I think Kentucky is going to be on the receiving end of some of that. Oh boy. Where, whether they're a 2 seed or a 7 seed, do you want Kentucky as a 7? I know anybody going up against Kentucky is at 7 in the second, in that round of 32 would have some, they'll have some nightmares leading up to that game. And that's kind of what you want to be. You can't lose to every, you know, be able to beat anybody or lose to anybody. We got to get past that. But it's at the end of the day, it is kind of just about the momentum and being in the right direction. And Cal has said it over and over again about, it's just about the journey from start to finish. How are you trending? Are you trending in the right direction toward the end? They were kind of, they took a step back with the Tennessee loss, and we're kind of starting to build back that up. But you just got to keep building that momentum. You can't have this up and down and, you know, kind of the wishy-washy stuff we've seen the last couple of years. You got to kind of be hitting that march and be prepared to take off. And I think this is a step in the right direction at minimum.
It absolutely was. And when it comes down to the bracket and getting in the NCAA tournament, I'm with you. I just don't think Kentucky's a team that a lot of these people want to see as a second round matchup or a Sweet 16 matchup, whatever Kentucky ends up being, because they have a guard that is made for March. And I said a guard, not just a backcourt. Like, we've been talking about this backcourt, but they have a guard, Jack. Rob Dillingham is the type of guard that pops in March. The guy that can get hot quickly, the guy that can make tough shots, the guy that the moment is made for. That's Rob. Rob has that, I mean, go back to it, the Kimball Walker, the Shabazz Napier, the feel to it of the guy that can just go and get buckets and get them for you in a hurry. To me, March is made for Rob, and Rob is made for March. And I think that's when you're going to see the best of Rob. Look at what he's doing right now and the confidence that he has, the way he's shooting the basketball. Like, that dude looks like he needs to just continue to shoot up draft boards and be a top five pick with the way he scores the ball. I love him with the ball in his hands. And when DJ comes back, Jack, and when they're at full strength with this backcourt, I know that I've loved Reed Shepherd with the ball in his hands a lot of times, but what I've seen of late, keep it in Rob's hands. I thought Rob made an excellent play when he threw the lob to Aaron Bradshaw in the first half. It was the way they attacked the ball screen coverage. Vandy played a drop. Rob comes off, snakes, attacks the drop, throws the lob. to Aaron for sprinting out of the ball screen. Like decisions like that, in addition to being able to cook and make shots and hit threes and hit them in a hurry, that's a guy that can go on a run for you in the NCAA tournament and either get you back in a game or put one away. That's the type of guys you want in your backcourt. And then you add in the Antonio Reeves, the Reed Shepherds, the DJ Wagners, and what Kentucky has collectively, you still got to have an alpha with the ball in their hands, and he certainly looks like an alpha.
It is fascinating to me the way he has just thrown out all of the bad stuff and the habits. And again, he's not a perfect perfect piece, but all of the bad decision making and the he has minimized that to an extent that it would not be out of the realm of possibility for him to be a top five pick. Like legitimately, that was the only thing holding him back coming into Kentucky. All of the just extra stuff, all of the, can this guy be a winning basketball player? And for him to not just take some of that stuff out, but for him to also maximize everything he does well and make shots at an, he's efficient, unbelievably efficient every single time out there. I thought we would have 3 of 13, 4 of 20. I thought we were going to get some of those, and you just kind of said, you got to just kind of live with it when it's Rob Dillingham, because you're going to get a 20 for 7 of 12 and 4 or 5 from three. But this is kind of the norm. He has made this his everyday thing, where you do have to start having the conversation of, is this the guy that you want the ball in his hands down the stretch in March? Like I saw somebody mention Carson Edwards on Twitter, kind of his March run, Kemba Walker, Shabazz Napier, those guys where you either got it or you don't. You're either Brandon Knight or Aaron Harrison, or you're a guy that nobody remembers your name because you didn't make the shot. Like it's one or the other. And Rob Dillingham has proven game after game after game. I mean, look, even the losses, Texas A&M hitting those big shots, the stretches there at the end. He is kind of emerging as that guy where I don't know what happens when DJ is a guy that you trust with the ball in his hands down the stretch, and I feel good about him in those types of moments. But man, there's a conversation to be had, and I think kind of changing gears ever so slightly, but if we're talking those end of game scenarios, what type of lineup and build you want for what your identity is going to be, I'm telling you, I'm still all in on the Big Z train and him being Kentucky's most talented, highest upside big on the roster that is going to bring the team to its absolute peak in March. If we can kind of, I've mentioned, he's the 7'2" Rob Dillingham, kind of work out some of those kinks and get the best version of himself out. I think he is a part of that lineup of the most talented. You got to roll out your five best. He's one of your five. I genuinely believe that.
And he's still getting acclimated to the way the game is officiated here in things. You can see it. And that's why he needs games like last night. They need moments where they can get him some extended minutes and some opportunities. I know we kind of talked about at South Carolina, he gave up a couple of rebounds that I thought that he didn't fight for and get positioned for. Last night, I saw him making the effort to get to those. He got to the offensive glass early. He set a screen that probably should have been called an illegal screen there early when he was in. But I saw some physicality from him, from Z, at a point to where there was some toughness there. I also saw some frustration when he didn't come up with a ball. And then I think it's what happened on the play, but he like slammed the ball to the floor. That tells me that's a guy that not only just wants to sit on the bench and be at Kentucky and be rah, 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 and cheering on his teammates. He wants to be in the game, and he wants to do things the right way, and he wants to have success. So seeing some fight there and some passion and some fire, I thought that was really good. But I'm with you. When it comes to the offensive skill set, the pass that he threw to AB, the lob, what other big on the roster is throwing that pass?
Zero.
When it comes to getting out of a screen and things. The IQ to recognize that the screen got blitzed and then just to drop into the open space like that, that's playing with some IQ. So more minutes for him means he gets more comfortable. But that's the challenge, and that's been the challenge since this roster's been put together, and we've been talking about it, and right now they're not at full strength. They're without two guys, And those are two very important guys when healthy to this roster. So that's still the challenge, Jack, is where does Cal decide to go when it gets time to go? And that's the $1 million, or I'm not even going to say million, that's the $9 million question, because that's why he gets paid the money to do it. And then when he figures it out, he's got to win with it. So that's the toughness and the tough part of this is figuring out what is the recipe and what works best for this team. He still has some hard decisions to make. It's February 7th, and I still can't tell you where Kentucky's going with a rotation.
Who? And it was – I go back to the Georgia game and what we said after the game. The reason why I was so high on Z wasn't because he made four horse shots. It was the court vision. It was the feel. It was the audacity for him to do some of those things. And it felt genuinely that this was the sustainable product with Z. And that's I think that's why Cal was so high on him after the game and why he kind of said, if that's who Z is, we got ourselves a game changer. Like, that was Cal's words, game changer. And it was because, like, think of the dump off to Jordan Burks in transition, where they try to hit Z in traffic for, you know, for him to bring it down, bring it back up for a dunk, whatever, in transition. And Z just had that one, you know, one step, two steps ahead to get it and immediately dump it right back off to Jordan in transition for the, you know, the momentum dunk, the hockey assist, finding Rob down low for the kick out and then back down to, you know, Justin Edwards for the dunk. It's those processing decisions where you're like, oh, whoa. Like, obviously he's going to get pushed around. Obviously the physicality isn't where it needs to. Obviously he's going to make dumb decisions and foul out in 12 minutes and turn the ball over and do just things where you're like, buddy, come on, man. We gotta. Who cares? That was the if we could get 20 minutes of that every single night, that's all I need. That's all I need. And then if you only get 20 out of him, then you can feel confident about 10 strong minutes from Ugo, 13, 14 strong minutes from AB. Like, then you do start getting the kind of attack by committee. But I think the guy is Z. And build him around with the feel and touch passes and all that from Trey as well, then you're getting into a real five out. Then you start getting into the real basketball player stuff that, you know, made this team so special to start with. But you also have the length and shot blocking with a 7'2" ridiculous wingspan unicorn of a big. I'm just telling you, I think long term that's going to be the fit. Who goes with those other three, though? Because we talked about Rob. On your side, I'm claiming Trey and Z. You got to name the guards, Sean.
That's the tough part about it all, because I still think that small ball is in there somewhere if they ever want to look at it. But it's so tough. So to me, all the guards are so different, just like all the bigs are so different. And I think that's what makes this team so unique and why I think the ceiling is very high. And it might be why the struggles have been present too at this point, because it's taken a while to figure out. And I still think that Cal is doing some things here to kind of try to keep everyone on the boat and everyone on the ship here and nobody kind of getting lost in along the way. Because The biggest reason, Jack, is I still don't think Cal knows where he wants to go, just because they've been missing somebody every single game. And it's been somebody's the last couple. It's been multiple guys that have been out. Over. Think of the guys that have missed games on this team this year. And it's always been right when they're about to hit some stride and playing their best basketball, something happens. You know, Justin Edwards and Rob miss at Arkansas. Then you're without Trey, you're without DJ, you're out with the dude. Then it's just something every game that I think it's really made it difficult on Cal and this staff to kind of navigate and figure out what direction they want to go. But most teams by February have it solidified rotation. Kentucky doesn't have it yet. I think it will at some point. But to answer your question, Rob's in there because Rob can make shots. Rob has the ability to beat somebody and go get his own and get hot. And he just adds. He applies so much pressure to teams that you have to be aware of not just him hitting one, but him hitting three on you in the span of about a minute and a half. DJ, to me, is vital to what this team does. And somebody put it in the chat earlier, I think he adds toughness to the backcourt. He adds an edge to him and something to this team that I think the others maybe don't have. Reed Sheppard's still in it. And I'm starting to like Reed off the ball, getting his feet set, taking shots. I know last night he didn't do much offensively when it came to making shots. Reed is still a very, very good three-point shooter that I want him taking as many open looks as he can. And then you got Antonio Reeves, Jack, who just continues to score 20-plus points. You're really making this hard on me because I don't know where to go.
I was just about to say, okay.
Coach of Kentucky. All right.
So you're telling me that the All-American that's averaging 20 points a game on basically 50, 40, 90 splits, it's like that that game where you got a start bench cut and it's like three best players of all time. Where you're like, I don't know. Just I want all of them. Can I play five guards? Like, is that possible?
And I hate doing it because like I don't undervalue any of them is what I'm trying to say. And I'm still in the go small category. But I think there's one defining factor that's going to determine it. And it's going to be the defensive end of the floor. Who is defending the best collectively as a group? I think that's going to be the combination of it. I'm still leaning Rob has to be on the floor, DJ has to be on the floor, and Reed has to be on the floor. I really, truly think that those are their three best players when it comes to backcourt play. But I still want to see it, Jack, and I don't know if we'll ever see it, of Antonio, Rob, Reed, DJ, and Trey at some point. But it has to be a collective rebounding effort, and they have to be together defensively. But if that team, to me, if they go small, at least, and maybe that's not what they close games with, maybe that's not what they go to for 25 minutes, but I do think I'd love to see a spurt of it just to see what it looks like and see how teams choose to defend it, but then also what Kentucky can do with that group on the floor together, because I just think there's so much spacing, so much offensive firepower, that if you can get to be a good team, defensive team together, I think that group could do some damage together.
So I want to talk a little bit about just the injury situation and Trey and DJ, the latest with them and kind of how we got to this point of both of them out. But before we do that, a very quick message from our friends FanDuel. While we're in the middle of basketball season, there's another big game coming up. Happy Super Bowl to all who celebrate from FanDuel, America's number one sports book. If you're like me, Super Bowl Sunday is all about scoring the best seat on the couch, grabbing your favorite football snacks, and placing some super bets. Sean, what are your Super Bowl plans? Because I'm starting to put together mine, and I'm counting down the minutes to Sunday.
My Super Bowl plans are to go with a group of friends and watch the game. I'm actually excited to watch it. I didn't get to watch it last year. Super Bowl is one of my favorite times of the year. And even when I don't care about the teams, I'm still so invested. And the only thing that I'm hoping for, Jack, is a close game. I want a really, really good game to watch.
And I always want it to be super high scoring, back and forth. Like I remember, and again, I'm a Patriots fan, but I remember the Patriots Eagles Super Bowl, where it was like the most entertaining, high profile, back and forth, just ridiculous shootout in the history of Super Bowl. Obviously, my team lost, and I was heartbroken and all that. But that's what I'm rooting for. That's what I'm hoping for this Sunday. I know there's a lot of talk about the Taylor and all that nonsense about it being bigger than football. But I'm just really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it with our friends at FanDuel. FanDuel has so many ways for you to end the season with a W or two or three. Not only can you bet on who will win the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 58. But FanDuel also has bets for which players will score a touchdown, how many points will be scored, and so much more. New customers, join today, and you'll get $200 in bonus bets if your first bet of $5 or more wins. Just visit FanDuel.com/Pilgrim to sign up. That is FanDuel.com/Pilgrim. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 and older and present in Kentucky. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. So Trey and DJ. Trey was... a late scratch. There was some hope that he's going to be able to power through, but so it's my understanding that before the Florida game, Sean practiced, got banged up pretty.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Bad. Thought it was just kind of normal wear and tear, and it kind of became something where they needed to go get x-rays and MRI to, you know, reveal that no breaks, no tears, no anything permanent, long-term concerning. But I was told the muscle's pretty banged up, pretty messed up. Very clear that the wear and tear on his body of playing him 38 freaking minutes per game against Stonehill and the early season games where it did not matter for him to play, ended up, you know, hurting him in the long run, and he is banged up quite a bit. And it became pretty clear that the only path for him to play at the level that we have seen him all year long up to this point, basically, you know, playing the best basketball of his career up until this recent stretch where he's been unplayable, was to rest him, that he had no choice but to rest. Became pretty clear that he was going to be out this one. Is in terms of what's next, I was told that Gonzaga is iffy and targeting Ole Miss as the feel pretty good about that one, but Gonzaga questionable, depends on how these next couple days of rehab and resting goes. But it's a tough situation, because it's good because you get to figure out what happens with Z, but you know that Trey is the known commodity. You know exactly what you're going to get out of Trey, and that's going to be the guy that you can lean on in March. It sucks that he's dealing with this and we get another game of no, you know, not being at full strength, and it sucks, but it puts you in a tough spot. And on DJ's side, I'd heard this weekend his ankle was the size of a softball, swollen, multicolored, discolored. Having to wear a boot after every single game because of how bad his ankle would continue to swell. This is an injury that dates back to September. It was something that happened, you know, during the preseason that he just kind of played through and dealt with. And, you know, he's tough as nails. You would expect a guy like DJ Wagner to play through hurt, but unfortunately just hasn't healed the way they thought. So the goal internally I'd heard was Gonzaga, but I heard elsewhere that, like, that's even a little ambitious. Like, we hope that he's back for Gonzaga. You need him against a team like Gonzaga, but I mean, his ankle's messed up. Like, that's the only thing that needs to be made clear, that it's gotten to the point where it was like, man, we wish we probably dealt with this better back early in the season when he tweaked it against Miami and maybe held him out some of those games and just kind of understood you might take a couple early losses that you weren't expecting, but if it means he's healthy and safe for the long run, then so be it. So two really troubling, kind of just tricky things that we got to deal with and something to account for just down, you know, this week and beyond. We didn't get an update from Cal, so that they were off today, so didn't get a full update, but both trending in the right direction. Rest is good. I mean, I'm glad that we have gotten four straight misses, or three games missed for DJ now. I'm glad that he's getting the rest he needs, because he was not in a good spot here recently.
Yeah, and I'm just glad this was actually a long week with not a Wednesday to Saturday. This is a, you know, a Tuesday to Saturday for these other guys too. So, but talking, let's go Trey first. So you could tell that wasn't Trey just from watching Saturday and even in, you know, the Florida game and things like that. That's not Trey Mitchell, and it was evident that he wasn't 100%. And I hate that, and obviously you respect the heck out of him for even going out there and trying to get it out and help his team, but there were multiple times you could see that he wasn't comfortable even going to the table. So credit to him for even trying to gut it out and play through it, but let's get him right and let's make sure that he's good to go for the stretch run here. And the same thing with DJ, Jack. And, you know, you mentioned maybe taking some games off early to get it right. I wonder how much pressure that was there just with how they were missing their entire front court, that he probably wanted to play through it and try to help. And Kentucky was already, you know, had a thin margin when it come to rotation pieces. So I'm sure there was something there, but that's probably the biggest thing that has to happen over the course of the next month. Not just win some quality games, but get healthy and be 100% when you line up in Nashville. I'm not even thinking for the couple of final regular season games. I just want everybody to be 100% when they go to the SEC tournament, and hopefully they get a couple of days there and go on a run in Nashville to kind of build some rhythm and some confidence going into the NCAA tournament. But I think getting healthy is probably the number one storyline entering the NCAA tournament, even ahead of the defense, honestly.
Yeah, and I guess that's what frustrated me so much about the rumors and speculation. Oh, DJ's quitting on his team. He's preparing for the draft. And, you know, Trey missing this one and you know, everybody just kind of being quick to attack and say he's soft. He's, you know, and it's like, understand that these are very real injuries. You know, just take DJ, for instance, the most competitive guy I can remember. I mean, Sean, can you remember a more competitive alpha guard in Kentucky under Cal? Like, do you remember, is there one that surpasses the mindset that DJ plays with?
Tyler Ulis is in that grouping. And then that late season De'Aaron Fox too, I would put. But I get what you're talking about though. It's not just, it's other things with DJ.
Yeah. It's like, don't use the cop-out answer with him. Don't do the, well, we've had Shaedon Sharpe, we've had Xavier Wheeler, we've had certain instances of extra stuff going on and different complex things that, yes, contributed to decisions of holding out or, you know, whatever. Don't use those bad examples to minimize DJ Wagner as a basketball player. It goes against everything in his DNA to miss games. Like, the reason why we're even in this circumstance is because he played when he probably shouldn't have. Like, so understand how dumb that sounds by saying a guy like DJ Wagner would be willing to quit on his team, because that's nonsense. Do I think that there is some internal regret, I think on both sides, about how things were handled and whether or not they could have, you know, probably dealt with this earlier and not, you know, when he's just fighting, you know, as an 18-year-old kid saying, oh, I just want to play. Let me get back in. We're going back home to play Penn and I'm going to have friends and family there. What if they had said then, buddy, we don't need you. We love you, but let's get your stuff right. I know it would have led to more drama and, you know, internal conspiracy theories about, well, you know, is he quitting back then? Is he holding himself? No, he's hurt, very significant ankle injury that they are trying to get right, and he is trending in the right direction. And as Cal said, he's going to return sooner rather than later. There is no extra drama about what that means or what comes next or whether or not he's holding out again. His draft stock has never been lower, like, because of the injury, because of, like, understand that he's now at a late first round pick, potentially even early second round of some of these mocks. You think that guy's going to quit right now to hold out for the draft? Like, what sense does that make? Wouldn't he try to get himself back to lottery status where he was before? Like, the arguments just never made sense. And you don't want to put gas on a fire of speculation, but like, it's something that you have to make clear and acknowledge how dumb it is, to in hopes of that not everything has to be a conspiracy, that not everything has to be something, you know, something else. Trey Mitchell is hurt. He's very, very seriously injured, that he needs rest, or we were going to get this version of Trey Mitchell the rest of the season. It was one or the other. Like, he could continue to fight through and go two for 10 in big games. You do want that? Or would you prefer he get himself right so we can get the best version of Trey Mitchell? They're both going to be fine. They're both going to be back sooner rather than later. I'm not guaranteeing them back for Gonzaga. I'm not, you know, I think from there, all bets are off. But anyway, it's frustrating that we don't have another game of full strength, but at least we get feel-good stories of Jordan Burks and Big Z and some of these other guys getting opportunities and making the most of them. You know, Cal always says, one man's misery is another man's opportunity. You had misery, you had opportunity, and they made the best of both.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you, and this is a big one coming up Saturday. It's a massive game, and regardless of who Kentucky has out there, to me it's a must win. Given you can't lose three in a row at Rupp Arena, but I saw somebody in the comments saying earlier, like, I'm tired. I'm sick of playing desperate teams. Well, you're getting another one Saturday, because you know why? This is they don't have any quad one wins. They just lost to St. Mary's by two over the weekend. And they have three quad one games remaining at Kentucky, at St. Mary's, at San Francisco. All three of them away from home. If Gonzaga loses this game Saturday, Jack, like, I think we're finally starting to move into the category here that they may not win the conference tournament. If they don't have a quad one win or something to show for in it, you could be talking about a Gonzaga team that misses the NCAA tournament, depending, especially if they lose one of those other games, one of those quad twos or quad threes or even a couple of quad fours. So just looking at their resume, Kentucky's facing a desperate team, and I kind of like that, though, because I want Gonzaga coming into Rupp in desperation mode, because I think Kentucky has to match it and be in desperation mode itself.
And did they not fail the last circumstance, the last exact scenario of this literally a week ago with Florida? Same exact scenario. They're kind of fighting for the, you know, they're a good team, haven't lost anyone bad, looking for that one statement win to kind of prove themselves as a tournament team. Identical scenario. They failed last time around. This is another chance for Gonzaga, as you said, Sean. This is a must-win game for them if they are an at-large team. Like, this is their one shot to kind of prove, all right, well, you know, we can take some of these other losses aside, and you can really put a lot of stock into this win for Gonzaga through the selection committee. Make the selection committee's life hard. Make them have to keep Gonzaga out of that tournament. Like, make them make that decision and earn that for yourself. Like, we're kind of in that same boat of, yeah, we've kind of beaten up on the bad teams and had a couple pretty solid wins here and there. North Carolina, obviously the big statement, but like, we got to build a resume too. Like, we're at two quad one wins up to this point with five to go. Like, we got to start building together a resume that makes the committee go, okay, well, maybe these guys aren't a seven seed or whatever they're going to try to do. This is a really big opportunity against a great, you know, really great coach, future Hall of Fame coach. I mean, what he has done with that program is unprecedented. And it's going to be a challenge. I'm really looking forward to it. I think the atmosphere is going to be really good too, Sean. That's something I'm really looking forward to see. You know, I think the fan base was kind of let down leaving that Tennessee game. I'm hoping that we get that second spark and they kind of get the reward that they weren't able to get at home against the Volunteers last Saturday.
Yeah. I'm expecting a much better result and a much better game, and something where hopefully Kentucky at least leads at different points throughout the game, because that one was painful to watch. But overall, like, you're talking quad one wins, you're talking resume and things, and this one, if Kentucky is able to get it Saturday, it might not stick as a quad one. I don't know. They're 28th in the net, got to stay in the top 30. But regardless, it's a win over Gonzaga, and it's a win that you feel good about. And then you go into some tough stretch here. I mean, I know you got Ole Miss coming to Rupp. You go on the road to Auburn next Saturday. You still got a road trip to Mississippi State. You still got to go to Knoxville. Like, there's some games there in this stretch, Jack, coming up. But it goes back to what I was saying about the Vandy win. We would have absolutely crushed them. They would have been crushed nationally had they lost the game. The winning it doesn't do anything to your resume, but losing it crushes you. So that's why I'm choosing to place value in how they won it, and that it was a step back in the right direction. Like, not in the right direction, because Kentucky, for the most part of the season up until the last 2 to 3 weeks, was trending and heading in the right direction. It just got sidetracked and stepped off the path a little bit. So now you got to get back on the path and follow that thing all the way to the NCAA tournament here and then be the best version of yourself. So I thought last night was a step in the right direction, but you can continue to take more steps that direction with the win Saturday at Rupp. And you need to win a big one in front of your home crowd.
Yeah, a couple quick notes. We are very excited to welcome a new partner, Fayette Heating and Air, and H2O Maestro. Good partnership there. Appreciate everything that they do. And, you know, they're very, very awesome. Their team of experts are ready to handle all of your heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit fayetteheating.com, your number one complete home solutions company in Kentucky. And as we were talking about just what the crowd's going to be, I'm looking forward to seeing if it's going to have the same juice as that Tennessee game. And the only way it's going to have the same juice as that Tennessee game, Game Time. Go with our friends at Game Time. You shouldn't have to worry when you're buying tickets to your next big event. Now isn't the time for guesswork with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their best price guarantee. Game Time does all of the hard work for you. Game Time has deals on tickets right up to the start of the event and even an hour after it starts. It's the place to find last-minute seats. Find exclusive flash deals and sponsor deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. Sean, I know you're excited for Saturday. I know you know the crowd is going to live up to the hype, and they're going to be going with our friends at Game Time to make that happen.
Yeah, if you're looking for last minute tickets, you got to go to Game Time. And trust me, Gonzaga Pro Jack, it's probably one of the hottest tickets that we've seen, honestly, or should see in years at Rupp Arena, because it's a non-conference opponent that has never been here, that never comes here. And it's one that for a long time, I think fans were begging to see. Remember, it was like, play somebody like Gonzaga, a home and away. So you got the chance, use promo code KSR, go to Game Time, get the view from your seat, see it before you purchase it, and get inside Rupp Arena for a game that Kentucky needs to win. It cannot lose three straight at Rupp Arena, and it needs every single person possible in the seats.
All in pricing, $135 a seat for what is going to be the hottest ticket of very, very long time. Like, it's going to be a really, really awesome environment. Like you said, it's a non-conference game that you don't get often. This is the one that we've been waiting for. That's not just another, you know, fill in the blank team that you know, just placeholder, a team that, you know, that has the name brand recognition that you go out of your way to attend. So I'm really looking forward to that. Make sure you utilize our friends at Game Time. They're the only ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. See the view from your seat before you buy, so you know exactly what you to expect when you arrive, and buy tickets in seconds with two taps. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download Game Time app, create an account, and use code KSR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem code KSR for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Oh, it's going to be a good weekend. It was a good little feel good opportunity down in Nashville. Now it's time for them to really get that statement win and continue that momentum. I want to see continued defensive progress. Let's, you know, continue to throw new wrinkles out there. Let's start showing the basketball world what this team is capable of, that we know they have the talent to do it, but now can they execute in that way to prove themselves, get back in that championship contending status where, you know, the conversation of who is going to be in the running there in March. I want Kentucky to get back in there, and I believe that they can, and it starts with a win over Gonzaga.
Yeah, I think so too. This is an opportunity in your building to really feel good about yourself, go 2-0 for the week, and then move into a new week next week. And look, the weeks are flying by here. And if you're breaking this season down into just weeks, this thing is moving quickly towards March. Like February, it's bubble season now. Like, you see Joe Lenardi in the bunker and things over the course of the next 4 to 5 weeks, Jack, and he's going to be updating bracketology, and everybody else will be updating bracketology, it seems like, every couple of hours. So get into Rupp Arena, cheer this team on. They need a victory. Get healthy. I think you're going to see the defense improve in the month of February, because I'm fully expecting John Calipari to go all in on the defensive end. And use a ton of practice time to get that area right, because I think the offense is fine. The offense is going to be there. The offense is going to travel. They're going to make shots. The offense wasn't the issue against Tennessee. The offense wasn't the issue against Florida. The offense is there. They're going to make shots and score points. It's about now being just good enough. Like I said, it doesn't have to be elite. Elite rebounding, yes, because I do think that this team can be a very good rebounding team. It just has to have some toughness and some effort on that part. Be a solid defensive team, maybe average, a little above, and I think that this team's got a shot to make a run and do something in March.
50-28 win in the rebounding category against Vanderbilt. That's a and they're number one in the SEC in defensive rebounding as well. So they're at least starting to put that part together. You know, obviously clean stuff up on the offensive glass, but you know, you're starting to see the vision. You're starting to see things put piece together where the literally the only missing link is tangible defensive growth, and we got a little ever so slight bit of that against Vanderbilt. Good feel good opportunity down in Nashville, hoping for another feel good opportunity down in Lexington on Saturday against Gonzaga. Sean, give me one key to a win on Saturday. What are you needing to see out of the Cats to feel good about leaving there with a win?
Oh boy. I'm going to say togetherness, because I think that that's where it starts on the defensive end for this team. Is I don't think that you have a group of really good individual defenders. Like, I don't see a Cason Wallace. I don't see a DeAndre Liggins. I don't see those guys on this roster. But together and communicating and defending, togetherness, I think that's where this team gets better defensively. So communication and playing together. So that's what I'm looking for on the defensive end. And honestly, Jack, nothing changes offensively. Just make shots. And that's a pretty – that's a hell of a combo right there a moment ago. You're talking about the rebounding battle and the way you shoot the three. Nobody's beating you, even whether it's Vandy or Tennessee or who. If you rebound that way and you make shots from three, you're going to win a lot of basketball games.
And the identity of Gonzaga is interesting too. They're 15th nationally in scoring offense. They are sixth in field goal percentage, 23rd in effective field goal percentage. They struggle from three at 33%, 220 nationally, and they are 15th nationally in defensive rebounding percentage, defensive rebounding rate. So 17 overall on the glass. So similar identity.
What's your guess on a line, if you just had to throw one out there? Because I've been trying to think, I've been trying to pinpoint what I think it would be.
It's going to be Kentucky minus 4.5.
I was going to go 3.5. So I was, we're in the same boat. And I actually, I think this is a game that if Kentucky plays well, I think that it can win by double digits. I really, truly believe that. Like, I think that Kentucky's better than Gonzaga. I think Kentucky's going to score the ball better than Gonzaga. And I think that you're going to see them start to take steps together on the defensive end. Even if it's not significant steps, it's baby steps on that end of the floor right now, but just build on it. Whatever you did in Nashville, build on it at Rupp Arena Saturday and then take that into an Ole Miss game next week. So I do think that this is a game that Kentucky will win, and I'm confident in it because I just do not see this team losing three in a row at Rupp Arena.
Yeah, and I think that's the stat. Like, I think that's one where I think the Rupp Arena losses are blown a little bit out of proportion. Like, I care, but I don't see that as this end all be all thing. Like, it and maybe it's just the young fan. I mean, I know that's a lot of kind of a younger fan narrative, but once you get to three straight, it's embarrassing. Like, I two was annoying, but once we get to something's got to change. We got to get that one.
I think fans, and it's okay that this is the way it is, because, I mean, I can see it, but I think fans connect being dominant at Rupp with being dominant overall in the NCAA tournament, because Kentucky, some of Kentucky's best teams went undefeated at Rupp Arena and did not lose home games. And we know the last few years they've lost their fair share of home games. 2017 did lose some games at Rupp Arena. I know Kansas and UCLA for sure. You go back 2014, I remember Arkansas was a loss at Rupp. There were some losses there as well. Florida got them that year. Like, that, those teams did lose some games. I guess the one that you throw in there this year and you're like, crap, was UNC Wilmington. That's the one. Yeah. That's the one that kind of clouds the resume the most to me. That looks really confusing when you look at it. If you take that one out, it's not even that bad of a resume. Just missing some quad one wins. So I think that's what fans look at, is being dominant at home. But the other side of this is, if you're going to make the argument that the NCAA tournament's not played on the road and winning road games, because 2011 lost nearly every single road game they played and then went on and dominated on a neutral floor. So I think you can get caught up in the defending your home court. Look at what happened in North Carolina. I mean, it's all around college basketball right now. Teams are losing. They're losing on the road. They're losing at home. It just does not matter. Teams are losing, and it's good teams losing. It's Kansas. It's Duke. It's North Carolina. It's Kentucky. It just does not matter. Tennessee, like, just get to March. Get to March. Be healthy. Let Rob cook. Togetherness. Everybody has to be together. Fans, players, program, all of it. Togetherness. That's the word, Jack. Closing with togetherness.
Zach Norton says, win the two tournaments. That easy. Just win them both. Just go to Nashville, win the whole dang thing, and then just go win the whole NCAA tournament.
I'm with Zach. Just
me too.
So I was on a podcast today, and it was talking about, I was having to pretty much, it was an interview about my life story, coaching, sources say, all of it. And I was asked, what is next for me? What is next for sources say was the question that they closed with. And I said, hopefully Phoenix, a March run, something that me and you can enjoy doing together that we have not got to do. That's the one thing this show's been missing, Jack, is a fun March. And we've not even had a fun Nashville. We didn't have a fun Tampa. We've not had anything fun because we didn't get to stay. Last year, I left at 1 o'clock in the morning and got home because I was like, I'm done with this. Like, I don't even want to stay here. I just want to go home and then wake up in my own bed. I don't want that this year. Like, I think that's what's next for sources say. I thought that was a very good answer.
And did you also mention our all-time bad moment with the St. Peter's game?
Yeah, I got to ask what my favorite thing about working with you is. And obviously outside of our friendship and all the other funny conversations that we can't talk about on this platform, but by far you saying this is a name your score game versus St. Peter's in the hotel lobby while we were recording just across the street from the arena. And then just hours later, it was a name your score game. All right. And having to, we got through that night together though, up until 4 a.m. We made it, we lasted. And that is probably one of the top five moments of this podcast. And people still give you hell about it.
I will never live that down. I mean, because imagine the worst tournament loss in the history of the school, and being the one guy beforehand and go, dude, I'm telling you, they are trash. They are absolutely terrible based off one stupid walkthrough. Like, what a ridiculous, dumb thing to say back then, before a tournament game of all games, a tournament game. Like, where anything can happen. And, you know, that was the basketball gods saying, hey, Jack, you're a moron. That was them just shooting their basketball lightning down on me in the middle of Indianapolis saying, to hell with you. That's what happened.
If I ever get a college head coaching job, I'm calling you to be my scout. You're going to be.
I hope not. you're going to be fired a week later.
No,
you're going to take the worst loss in the history of that school's program and go, well, we're both back on the Kentucky beat. Here we go. Back to regular old sources say, because we both got canned because of my ass.
No, we're going first game of the NCAA tournament this year. You're in charge of the scout. You're going to be in charge of the opponent scout when it comes down to what we talk about on the show. Cause we've been doing some basketball knowledge training and things with you. Your knowledge of the game has really taken off in the last few months and year.
All I needed was a smack in the face to know that I really screwed that one up. All right, we're rambling here. Let's get out of here, Sean. Where can fans find your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry.
Find me on Twitter as well at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Go subscribe KSR Plus. We're having a blast over there building that community. You do not want to miss that. Also subscribe to this channel. If you're watching it without being subscribed or liking or commenting, then what in the world are you doing? So make sure you do that. Appreciate each and every one of you. As always, we will be back on Sunday with another jam-packed Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.